your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look at me. Dare to go beyond skin deep. Take another look and see I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I am so beautiful.
Good afternoon and welcome to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with your host, Doris Smeltzer. What does it mean to truly love the skin you're in? Keep listening and find out. Now, here's your host, Doris Smeltzer.
Greetings and welcome to this week's Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep. I want to thank our listeners for the amazing emails you've been sending. Your questions help to guide the content of this show, so please continue to communicate with me, doris@savoryourself.org. As is true with every show, the journey that has brought me to Savor Yourself began when our 19-year-old daughter, Andrea, died of bulimia 8 years ago. Because Andrea is such an integral part of this show's purpose, each segment begins and ends with her words. In a journal entry she made just a few days before her 19th birthday, she reflects on all she learned from a breakup with a boyfriend. She wrote, "To everything there is a purpose and a reason for each experience we have. There is a depth to the universe which is profound and extends far deeper than the pain you feel now, circling back around until there is a time in the future when that experience, that lesson, is needed and useful. Not painful, but beautiful. Search for the lessons. They are the roadmaps for tomorrow." Today's guest, Dr. Anita Johnston, will be giving us roadmaps, not only for tomorrow, but for transformations as well. Anita is an extraordinary psychologist specializing in eating disorders and women's issues. She directs the Anorexia and Bulimia Center of Hawaii, and her amazing book, Eating in the Light of the Moon, How Women Can Transform Their Relationships with Food Through Myth, Metaphor, and Storytelling, has been translated into 5 languages. Anita has a unique approach to treatment that highlights a process that is as old as the spoken word, the use of storytelling as a means of enlightenment. For more information on Anita's treatment center, her book, and her approach, you can find her on the web at dranitajohnston.com. That's D-R-A-N-I-T-A, and then Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N.com. Get ready to be enlightened. Welcome, Anita.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you. I am so struck by Andrea's words because there's so much wisdom in that and in the joy of finding the meaning in whatever the struggle is, if it's with a breakup or eating disorder, that's where the joy lies.
Yes, it is so true. So tell us, Anita, how is it that myths and metaphors are useful for those struggling with eating disorders?
Well, they're useful in a couple of ways. One is if you can understand that before the time of the written word, that's how wisdom got passed down. And it was an oral tradition, and so embedded in myths and fairy tales is a great deal of extraordinary wisdom about what it means to be human and how we cope and how we survive and how we thrive. And so the information is coded, and it takes a bit of work, but it can be decoded. The other reason why stories and myths or metaphors are valuable is they speak in a different language to us. And it's a language that requires imagery and also requires that our bodies participate, because we feel things in our bodies when we hear certain myths and stories that resonate with us. So what I found is that when I'm working with someone struggling with any kind of disordered eating, as they learn this language, they can start to see the metaphors in the story that is their own life, and they can find the wisdom and meaning in that as well. So it's a pretty powerful way to address something that is invisible, actually, but that we can feel. And it's the kind of thing that we can then understand at a deep level and on many, many different levels, physical, emotional, spiritual, all at the same time.
You know, I think it's so interesting that, I mean, so what you're saying resonates completely with me. And I know that what we often think of when we hear the word myth or storytelling is that is that represents something that is not true.
Right.
Yet what we find, just as you were describing through myth and through storytelling, is the absolute truth.
See, that's where the language of metaphor comes in. Because if you listen to the story with just your outer ear, for example, wait, Little Red Riding Hood, she went and she there's this wolf and it ate her grandmother, and it's like, it sounds ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
But if you learn the language of metaphor, you can hear that story with your inner ear, and you start to hear the warnings that are being given about girls traipsing through the forest, about what can happen, and that there's all kinds of things to understand in this story if you don't take it too literally. And that's where the language of metaphor comes in. So what happens is then you can start to look at whatever it is you're doing with food, if you're restricting or binging and purging or eating compulsively, and start to see that it has a message. It's talking to you and for you about deeper hungers you have that you may not even know you have.
Ah, you just went right into my next question, which was, if eating disorders are not really about food, and beyond the deeper messages, what are they about?
They're about hunger. Hunger. They're about soul hunger and emotional hunger and desire and longing, and not knowing quite how to feed those hungers. So what happens is that we take them literally, and we think the hunger is for food. And so either we eat compulsively and still never get that hunger fed, or we become terrified of food because we know that no matter how much food we eat, the hunger is insatiable.
Mm-hmm.
So we're afraid to even begin to eat. Or we eat and then realize this is not working and we do something to get rid of it. So what's required is an understanding about hunger and how that's different from food.
All right. Now, there, prior to starting the program, you and I were chatting,
mm-hmm.
and I asked if you'd be willing to share the story that you share in your book, Eating in the Light of the Moon.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, it's the perfect example of how metaphors work. Because I remember the moment I was sitting in my office with someone who was so filled with loathing about their struggle with their disordered eating, and they were just saying really mean things to themselves and about themselves, and I tried to give another view. And because I try to speak to someone in whatever language they're speaking, I tried to do it in terms of metaphor. And this particular, it's not really a myth, but it's an example of how metaphor can turn perceptions around pretty quickly. So the metaphor is, imagine you're on the banks of a raging river. It's pouring down rain. And you slip and you fall in and you're drowning. You're getting pulled down through the rapids. And along comes a big log and you grab onto the log and the log saves your life. It keeps your head above water when surely you would have drowned. And eventually that log carries you to a place in the river where the water is calm. And from the riverbank, from there you can see the riverbank, which is where you want to go. But you can't get there because you're holding on tightly with one arm while you're trying to swim with the other. Now, for me, the log is a metaphor of the eating disorder. And that it's important to understand that, make no mistake about it, the eating disorder has served a function, a very important function. It has kept you from drowning in some strong emotional currents that you had no way of staying afloat. The problem is that now it's getting in the way, the very thing that saved your life, is getting in the way of you going where you want to go in life. So, of course, now there's always people on the riverbank yelling, let go of the log, let go of the log, let go of the log. And you feel like an absolute idiot because you can't let go of the log. Well, the way I see it is letting go of that log may not be the very best thing to do initially. Because what happens if you let go of that log, because all those people who love you so much are telling you to do so, start to swim to shore, get halfway there, and realize you don't have the strength to make it. Now, what that means is you don't have the strength to make it back to the log either, and you're really sunk. I happen to believe we have a wise part inside of ourselves that will not let us let go of something until we are ready. So, what do you do instead? Well, you let go of the log, and you practice floating. As soon as you start to sink, grab back on. Then you let go of the log, and you tread water, and when you get tired, you grab back on. And then you let go of the log, and you swim around it once. Grab back on, twice, 10 times, 100 times, 200 times, whatever it takes for you to have the strength and confidence to make it to shore. Then you let go of the log because it no longer has a purpose. So what that means is so much of recovery requires developing certain skills for coping with the stresses that life can bring, and that someone somewhere along the line has stumbled upon the eating disorder as an attempt to cope, and it does to a certain extent. The only problem is you're not going to get where you want to go in life with that. And so it requires continually developing these skills until they are able to do for you what the eating disorder once did. That's why it's important to honor the process and appreciate that you developed it for a reason, and a really good reason.
You know what? Let's hold right there. We're going to run to break real quick, and we'll return with more from Dr. Anita Johnston.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street.
Yo, what's up, baby? Want to learn some history?
I got live learning, beautiful books inside.
And don't expect anyone to just offer you an education.
Who needs a high school diploma, huh?
And fortunately, you can't buy a diploma from some guy with a briefcase. But there is one way you can get the educational skills you and your family need for free, with free family learning programs. Call 1-877-FAMLIT-1 for information on free GED, computer training classes, and other family learning programs. That's 1-877-FAMLIT-1.
Check it out, check it out. You want your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
After all, you can't get your education on the street. Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. The first step to a better life. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are back with Dr. Anita Johnston, author, presenter, and therapist specializing in eating disorders. Anita, before the break, you were talking about how, so now we know what the purpose of the disordered eating is. What's the next step?
Yeah, because understanding the purpose isn't enough. It's not enough to say, oh, I eat for emotional reasons, and I'm sorry. You now need to develop the skills in order to recover. And there are some skills that I think are absolutely essential. One of those is developing proprioceptive awareness. And what that means is really being able to read your body precisely, so that you know your hunger and fullness signals, which are actual physical sensations in your body. I feel like pizza is not a physical sensation. So finding those physical experiences that inform you, just as you learn to know when you need to rest and when you need to move your body. And when you need to go to the bathroom, I mean, our basic instincts that register within our bodies. So proprioceptive awareness is really an important piece. Assertiveness, I've never met anyone who's ever recovered from any kind of disordered eating without developing this skill. And the way in which I understand this skill is it's the capacity to express your feelings towards somebody in a way that honors your needs and feelings and honors the needs and feelings of the other person. So it's a way of speaking your truth in the kindest way possible, but speaking it nonetheless. So that's a critical skill. And if I had my way, this would be taught in every school in the country. You know, we may not use our algebra ever again, but we certainly need this communication skill.
Yes.
And then another essential skill is developing the capacity to self-soothe. And I call that the inner mother. And that, because I think of mother as a verb, mothering, which is nurture and comfort. And one of the things that happens is that we often confuse the physical symbol of mothering, the concrete mothering, which is food. We confuse that with desire to be comforted. So we call it comfort food. But the problem is, it's just like somebody confusing the American flag with freedom. You can have 1,000 American flags in your house and not feel more free, because it's simply the symbol of what you're wanting. And so it is, food can be the symbol of the desire for mothering, which is nurture and comfort. So one of the skills someone needs to develop is ways of comforting and soothing themselves so that they create a strong inner mother that serves as an antenna to bring in mothering that's all around them. You can get mothering from Mother Nature. You can get mothering from your dog. You can get mothering from your husband. You can get mothering, you know, from the friend next door. Mm-hmm. It's an energetic, not something physical. Mm-hmm. So those are important skills. And when someone has developed those skills, they're way on their way to recovery. In fact, those skills are with them for the rest of their lives, long after the eating disorder has come and gone.
Indeed. It was interesting because you talked about being able to tell your truth as kindly as you can. And in last week's show, Carolyn Costin mentioned...
Yes, truth without judgment. I love that.
Truth without judgment. Yeah, I think it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a skill that absolutely needs to be taught.
And it's hard.
But
it is a skill. You know, it's a skill like driving a car or riding a bicycle or learning to swim, that with repetition, you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
you may not be able to do it immediately. Most of us can't. There are one or two of those very, very, very skilled individuals that can, for example, hop on a bicycle and just go riding down the street. But most of us, we have to go through this clumsy phase and skin knees and all of that. But you can learn it. It's a skill.
Yes. You also talked about self-soothing.
Mm.
And I think that that also is something that so needs to be taught.
Yeah.
You mentioned a number of the ways, and it's interesting because you said, you know, you can self-soothe by being in companionship with your dog. And I can't tell you the number of people who I've heard from over the years who have said that although getting into treatment on all of that was working on them healing, once they got a pet, the relationship with the pet was a real healer, and I would imagine because it has so much to do with self-soothing.
Well, and I think what animals bring us is they really do, our pets bring us the experience of unconditional love.
Yes.
I mean, I tell you, they love us no matter what. and I think that's harder to come by in humans. I don't even know if it's possible in humans. You can love someone, but if they murder someone, I don't know. Can you keep loving them? And that's really hard. But my cat can eat a bird, and I'd still love her.
Right.
So I think that's one thing they bring us that is very comforting and soothing. Unconditional love.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, the next question is one that we also talked about last week with Carolyn Costin, and I know that you and she collaborate often.
She's fabulous.
Yeah.
I'm in her fan club.
And I think she's in yours as well. And I'm in both of your fan clubs, so there. So I know that you two actually agree on this issue, but I just don't think that the message can be repeated often enough. Mm-hmm. So do you think a person can ever fully recover from struggles with disordered eating?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been working in the field for 30 years, and I know lots and lots of individuals who have. And the thing is, it's sort of like, it's like a weed. Okay, if you just keep cutting off the weed at the top, given the right circumstances, it can come back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go down and you clear the roots, it's a done deal. So if you really dive deep enough and find what's underneath whatever the eating behavior is and find that unseen, invisible force or forces that are continuing to fuel it and you clear that, it's a done deal. Because what you've done is you've taken what is unconscious, which is basically what is out of your conscious awareness, into consciousness. And in order for an eating disorder to work, in order for it to perpetuate, it has to remain unconscious. It has to remain out of your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So the recovery process of one is becoming absolutely conscious whenever you're doing whatever it is you're doing with food about what the real issue is, what the real hunger is. Because out of that will come an understanding of what you can do that will better address that hunger than eating or restricting. And then it's over.
Certainly.
I mean, not that, I think it's important to understand, not that it's ever over that we don't use food to feed our hungers. I mean, all of us do it to one degree or another. I mean, I remember when I was a student and I was studying for a test, I'd be in front of that refrigerator all the time trying to trick myself into thinking that what I was feeling was hunger, not performance anxiety, or not worrying that I couldn't, you know, I wouldn't ever get this, or I wouldn't, you know, be able to write this paper. So we all do it. We all use food to one degree or another. But what happens with an eating disorder is that's the only way you know how to cope with the stresses in your life, or it's like the primary way, rather than, you know, yeah, sometimes you're going to do that, and then you go, oh, yeah, I know what's going on. I better take care of that.
Yes.
So I tell my clients often when they come to see me, and they think I'm nuts when I say this, but that they're going to start to see their disordered eating as their best friend. In the sense, once they understand that it's simply a signal, it's like the light that goes on in your car to tell you you need gasoline or oil. Now, certainly, you can go to the service station and have that darn stupid light disconnected, But why would you? Then you're going to run out of gas in the middle of nowhere, or you're going to burn up your engine. When if you get, oh, it's a signal that tells me there's something I need to do here. There's something I need to attend to. There's something I need to address. Then it takes a moment to recognize, and then it works for you, not against you.
I thought it was interesting that you say that. Okay, that thought just left my head. I apologize. There was something you said
about the friend.
I think it was a little later. I know, when you gave the example of, you know, standing in front of the refrigerator door and knowing, saying, oh, being, if we're unconscious of it, you know, thinking that's what we're feeling is physical hunger,
yes,
when what it might be is performance anxiety.
Yes.
And that if we consciously say, ah, this is familiar, I know what this is,
mm-hmm,
and then dealing with that.
Yes, then it's like, okay, so I'm standing in front of the refrigerator, and that little voice, and this is what I warn people who come into therapy, eventually you're going to have this little voice that's going to start talking to you, and it's going to say, you know, you're not really hungry for those muffins. What's really going on is you are stressed and feeling incompetent, and you need to address that. That little voice is going to come on. And so then you're standing there, and you go, okay. And then you may choose to eat the muffins anyhow, but now you're doing it consciously, which is a huge difference. And then you go, okay, but I still need to find some way to soothe myself because I'm starting to feel really inadequate right here, right now.
Right.
So what can I do? Well, I'll call my friend and say, oh, my gosh, I don't think I'm ever going to get it. And I know she'll say, oh, you know, Anita, you can get this. You've done it before. Or I might journal to get it out. Or I might, you know, I've got tools for dealing with the stresses that life sends.
I've talked with many who have said that in addition to spending time with their animals, mm-hmm, they also find that what you just said, journaling, but they also find artistic,
yes,
ways of expressing themselves.
Because that's soul hunger right there.
Yeah.
You know how it is when you're doing something that's creative and you lose all track of time?
Yes.
Because you're being fed so much that it's exhilarating. You're really taking in energy, not just expending it.
Oh. And that can be an incredibly powerful healer.
Oh, absolutely.
And you also then, too, are documenting a process,
mm-hmm,
that when you look back over,
mm-hmm,
you know, you can see, wow, I can remember what I was yearning for when,
mm-hmm,
I drew that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't know it in the moment. So in reflection, we go, oh, now I get it.
Is it, that can be true, too, even about with the journaling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think we may not even be aware of what we're feeling,
mm-hmm,
until we actually write it down,
mm-hmm,
and read it back. And I know that many times I'm surprised at what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are going to break. Please stay tuned for more with Dr. Anita Johnston.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Would it be crazy if you just stopped everything, packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? Would people think you'd lost your mind? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? A village crowded with Buddhist temples, not skyscrapers. A place where there isn't a word for recluse, but 1,000 words for community. Would it be crazy to go 5,000 miles from home? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To build libraries and fill them with stories? Prepare a meal with food you helped grow? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself, Beyond Skin Deep, with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are talking to Dr. Anita Johnston, therapist and author, who is sharing her enlightening methodology. So, Anita, how can someone learn to tell the difference between physical and emotional hunger?
Okay. Well, I think one of the ways that helps is to imagine that you have two tanks inside of yourself, tank A and tank B. Now, tank A is the tank that you fill when you need physical nourishment, and you fill it with food. Tank B is the tank of that other kind of hunger. That's when you're needing emotional or spiritual nourishment, and you fill it with things like attention, affection, acknowledgement, appreciation, meditation, prayer, and so on. But the problem is many of us get the two tanks confused, and we think there's just one tank. So before we know it, tank A is full and overflowing, and we're still hungry, or we're afraid to put anything in tank A because we know we'll never, ever be able to fill it up. So the process is to tease out tank A from tank B, and you develop this by learning your physical hunger and fullness signals. And there's a little exercise that I teach people to do, which is when you're physically hungry or when you're reaching for food, ask yourself, what's the physical sensation that's telling me I'm hungry, and where in my body do I feel it? And you look for an actual physical sensation, a movement or a stillness, a roughness, a smoothness, a heaviness, a lightness, a warmth, a coolness, and so on. Many people say, well, I feel lightheaded and dizzy, or my stomach growls really loudly. Not. That's not hunger. That's famished. If you wait to eat until you're famished, what's going to happen? You're going to overeat, you, me, and the rest of us. The physical sensation of hunger is subtle. It's a whisper, not a shout. But let's say that's all you know is lightheaded, dizzy. So you reach for your food, take two bites. Ask yourself, am I still hungry? And then you look inside your body for a physical sensation that's telling you you are hungry. And you keep going two bites at a time, trying to identify where in your body and exactly what is it, as if you were consulting with an extraterrestrial who said, look, I'm here on your planet to help promote world peace for 4 weeks, but I understand you folks need to eat while you're here, and I don't know when to eat and when to stop eating. And your job is to be able to describe these sensations so precisely that that ET will know what to do. Mm-hmm. So that's a little exercise for developing the proprioceptive awareness that I spoke of earlier. So let's say you learned it. You totally got your hunger and fullness signals. And I remember I had a client, she came running, and she goes, I found it. I said, well, what? And she goes, my hunger signal. I said, oh, what is it? She goes, it's a little tickle, and it's right here. And she pointed, like, right at the bottom of her rib cage. And then I had another client, she struggled with bulimia, and she did not know her fullness signal at all because she you know, never sat with it very long. And so she came in one time, and she said, oh, I know my fullness signal. I said, oh, what is it? She goes, it's the sensation of one cylinder sliding perfectly into another until there's a funk. So we each, it can be different for each of us, but we all have one. So that's how you find your hunger and physical hunger and fullness signals. Now, let's say you're reaching for that pizza. You check in, not a hunger signal in sight, but you still want that pizza. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Now you're in tank B, and tank B is the world of metaphor. You have just tumbled down Alice in Wonderland's rabbit hole where food is no longer food. It is the symbolic representation of what it is you are truly hungry for. So the first question you would ask yourself is, okay, what's the feeling I'm trying not to feel? Because it's not our feelings that cause us to eat when we're not hungry, but it's our attempt to not feel those feelings. So what's the feeling I don't want to feel? And you do a scan of your day. Am I annoyed at the jerk who cut me off on the freeway? Or am I nervous about something my boss said? Or am I concerned about my kids' upcoming teacher conference? Well, you do a scan. But most of the time what will happen is you go, well, I don't know. Everything's fine. Just fine. No, nothing. I'm not. So here's when the food will speak to you. But remember, it's speaking in code. It's speaking in the language of metaphor. And your job is then to crack the code. So you take that pizza, knowing now you're in tank B. There's no physical hunger here. And you see what are the qualities of that food that you really love. And it works something like this when you crack the code. Sweet foods have to do with either feeling like there's not enough sweetness in your life or you're not sweet enough. Crunchy, salty foods typically have to do with unexpressed frustration and anger. Warm foods, soups and stews, a lot of times have to do with a craving for emotional warmth. Spicy foods for excitement, stimulation, and change in your life. And chocolate, sex, and romance. Happy Valentine's Day. So now these are just general categories, but it's a way to begin to do what your mother told you not to do, which is play with your food.
Mm-hmm.
This is to really look at it without judgment, but with curiosity, and you're invoking the metaphors and see how they speak to you, because they will tell you what your true hungers are. Once you've ruled out physical hunger and fullness. And it works in the reverse. If there's certain foods that you are afraid to eat, it's going to tell you about hungers you're afraid to address.
That I find the most fascinating.
Well, it makes recovery fun, you see. So many people are just recovery, and I'm not saying it's not a difficult, painful process. I understand that. However, that's not all that it is. There's a great joy in the recovery process itself. And playing with your food in this way brings the meaning of what's underneath the surface to the surface. And what happens when you discover these metaphors almost every single time? There's a little chuckle that occurs inside of you. And it's the chuckle that comes from awareness. You go, oh, I got it.
I would imagine, too, that in playing with your food in the way you've just described, that's going to take some of the charge.
Because it's not that you're not doing something because you're stupid or bad or wrong or flawed or broken or damaged. It's just you haven't cracked the code yet, that's all. It takes a little time to do that.
So today I received an email. And it was from a young woman, and she wrote how she has suffered with bulimia for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
I really couldn't get a sense of her age, but I think maybe early college. But I don't know whether or not she's still living, you know, at home with her parents. She knows well what she calls the entity inside her that she can't control. A statement she made in her email, though, just jumped at me because I hear it all the time. And she said, I don't want to die, but more than that, I don't want to gain an ounce.
Mm-hmm. And you see, for me, again, the difficulty a lot of people have with eating disorders is they think it's about food and fat.
Yeah.
Not about the hidden meanings behind that. So with this individual, I think it would be important to explore exactly what that means. What does an ounce mean to her? How would that affect her? Because, again, we're dealing with language here, and you need to drop beneath the language.
And it sounds like it would be important to have a guide.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, it's really hard to get beneath that by yourself. And yet there are a lot of fabulous guides out there. It's the difference between finding your way through the jungle all by yourself. You may be able to do it, but gosh, why would you when there's an experienced guide right there who knows the trails and the pitfalls and the twists and the turns that can get you right through?
Right. You know, it's interesting. When you were talking about the different classifications of food and the things that they might represent, sweet, mm-hmm. meaning mm-hmm. you're not sweet enough mm-hmm. or having more sweetness in your
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
It, something you said just really jumped at me, and that was that the crunchy, salty,
yes.
unexpressed frustration and anger.
Pretzels, chips, all that stuff.
Now, see, I would think, given the culture that we live in and the way that girls are enculturated, the way that we are taught how to be in this world,
mm-hmm.
that many of us would be craving crunchy, salty.
Well, again, it depends. Crunchy, salty is not my thing. Mm-hmm. I usually go for sweet and smooth. And I know that that is a reflection on my personality because I'm always looking for what's sweeter. I'm always trying to find the sweet spot in any difficult situation. So, you know, it's a reflection of my coping style. And so, again, you see, it's not simply pathological. It's mm-hmm. information about us that we may not be able to get any other way. And sometimes the information is so profound and so deep that it's earth-shattering. I don't know how much time we have, but I can give an example, even just from my own life, of how I use my cravings to inform me rather than something to go battle with.
I would love to hear that. We have 2 minutes, exactly.
Yeah.
So 2 minutes, mm-hmm. and then if we need to, we can continue after break.
Okay, so here's the story. I have a home office where I work, and I had a two-hour break. And in this two-hour break, I was craving a vanilla cone dipped in chocolate. Now, I had just had lunch, so no physical hunger signal anywhere, but I was craving. It wouldn't shut up. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do what I tell my clients to do, which is I'm going to go get that very food, I'm going to sit down with it and consciously and deliberately try to find what it is in the food that is talking to me. So I went and I got myself a vanilla cone dipped in chocolate. And I sat there eating and going, what is it? And finally, boom, I got it. Dairy Queen. Now, to tell you what was beneath all of this, I grew up on the island of Guam, which is a little tiny island in the Pacific, and when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, there were only two fast food restaurants, one of which was Dairy Queen. So after church, my dad would take us to Dairy Queen every Sunday, and I would get myself a vanilla cone dipped in chocolate. Now, fast forward to what was going on in my life at that time, and 9/11 had just happened, and I saw all those images on the TV that horrified everybody else. And every cell in my body wanted to shut down. I did not want to feel what I was feeling. But, whoops.
You know, this is wonderful because now, everybody, you have a really good reason to stay tuned for more with Dr. Anita Johnston.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure, what's up?
There's this girl I kind of like.
Well, if there's one thing I know, it's women.
Really?
Well, they didn't call me Velvet for nothing.
I don't get it.
Smooth. I was smooth.
Oh.
Anyway, it's easy. You just got to impress her. Show her how strong you are.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
I don't know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt, if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, ugh! Try it.
Ugh!
See, there you go. And you should dress up. Start wearing a shirt and tie.
I'll look like a dork.
No, you'll look successful.
Okay.
And finally, you can start using my cologne. The ladies love it, so don't be shy. Splash it on.
Thanks, Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at AndreasVoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to AndreasVoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Real Life Solutions. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see, I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself, Beyond Skin Deep, with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are back with the remarkable author and therapist, Dr. Anita Johnston. And Anita, before break, you were telling us the story of the chocolate-dipped vanilla ice cream cone at Dairy Queen.
And this is not a commercial for Dairy Queen.
No.
So fast forward to, like I said, what was going on in my life at the present, 9/11 had just happened. I was horrified and not wanting to feel horrified. Every cell in my body wanted to shut down, but I had clients who had been in those buildings. I had clients who had had loved ones in those buildings, and in order for me to do my work, I could not shut down. So what was going on is that I was craving, I was hungry for the time that I was a little girl, I lived on a little island, and nothing horrible ever happened. So I went, oh, hallelujah, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was happy that now I no longer had to keep eating because I was quite full. I got it. I understood. Okay, this is what it was about. So I go in to see my next client, and she comes in, and she's panicking, and she's going, oh, my gosh, you're going to have to help me. I'm gonna gain back that 40 pounds I just lost. And I go, wow, what's going on? She goes, well, I can't stop eating this vanilla ice cream. I don't even like vanilla ice cream. I like chocolate. And I went, well, why are you eating vanilla ice cream? She goes, well, you know, I had a party, and I had a big Costco tub of it in my freezer, and I've left it alone all this time, but now I can't stay out of it. And I said, well, gosh, was there ever a time you liked vanilla ice cream? And she said, Dairy Queen. She was from New York City. And so I laughed just the way you laughed. Because when you get it, it's very funny. So I laughed, and I said, let me tell you what I just did. And I shared with her my experience. She had a good laugh, and that was it. It was over. She could no longer continue to do what she was doing with the vanilla ice cream because it was conscious.
Uh-huh.
So that night I'm on the phone talking to one of my sisters who still lives on Guam, and I was sharing the story with her. And she said, oh, my gosh, that's why I did it. I drove across the island in rush hour traffic to get to the only Dairy Queen left on the island because I had to have it. And she had her own health food store with her little frozen yogurt, you know, pump.
Uh-huh.
But no, she had to have that. So what I'm saying about this is how deep, how profound the information is that we can get from our cravings if we paid attention. Now, to take it one step further, I don't know if you know what breast milk tastes like.
I do.
But it tastes like melted vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no wonder for many of us when we are needing mothering, when we're needing to be soothed and comforted, we get triggered into our very first experience as an infant, whether it's at our mother's breast or at the bottle, because formula is designed to taste like breast milk, where you're just in such distress, and then your first experience of being soothed is with this. why we're not all majorly addicted to vanilla. I don't know, but I guess most of us are. but that's what I'm talking about. It's the connections are really profound.
They really are. And I'm amazed that Dairy Queen isn't, like, doing a whole lot better than given the reason for that craving. So why do you emphasize the joy of recovery?
Because otherwise, what is the point?
I mean,
really, why slog through this difficult stuff and heal these old wounds if not to have a life that is even better than you've ever imagined? And so to me, that's the joy. The joy comes in the process of finding meaning of your struggle and then living it. Living it so that you have these skills that here in Hawaii, if someone goes to the ocean with their boogie board, let's say, and they stand in front of the waves holding the boogie board in their face, facing the waves, what's going to happen is if anything more than a few ripples comes in, they're going to get knocked over again and again and again until you get the idea, wait a minute, I can turn around and I can ride this wave. And then, oops, here comes another one, I'll catch that one. Oops, and after a while, it even gets to be fun. So that understanding that the emotions that move through us are like waves in the ocean. If we try to fight them, it's not fun. You fight reality, reality always wins. But if you can learn to ride the emotion, then you're going to get pretty good at it. You're going to be having some fun. And when the big waves come in, and they do for all of us, we will all experience the loss of a loved one, or maybe medical health problems or financial distress. We get hit by big ones. We'll know how to ride them.
It's interesting that you use that metaphor as well. I know that in my book, when I talked about what the grief was like for me after Andrea died, it was the ocean.
Yeah.
It was the waves. It was the being pummeled by those waves before I learned how to ride them.
Yeah.
So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't learn how to ride them, there's not much joy in life.
No.
Mm-hmm. You're fighting, fighting. It's something that comes from nature. Our feelings are as natural as the waves in the ocean, even the uncomfortable ones like anger and fear and sadness.
Yes, I think we need that message again and again and again. So how is a woman's relationship to her menstrual cycle connected to disordered eating and body image issues?
Well, if you look at it this way, first of all, we live in a culture that at best acts as though a girl's first menstrual cycle is no big deal. At worst, pummels her with shame. Like, oh my gosh, you're on the rag, or you know, you're PMSing, or oh, now you got the curse, and so there can be trauma actually about what it means to be in the body of a woman. So if your very first experience of that announces you, girl, you're in the body of a woman, is ignored or treated, even just dismissed. Sometimes what we psychologists understand this about, for example, attachment theory and trauma. Sometimes what doesn't happen and should have happened can be as traumatic as what does happen and shouldn't. So that the way our culture treats a girl coming into the body of a woman with such dismissal, even disdain, even shame, affects her profoundly, whether we know it or not, at a very deep level. So then at that time, you know, this is about the time that a girl might be developing curves. Now, of course, nobody's telling her that the reason why you might be getting bigger thighs or a bigger butt is because in the event you get pregnant and you decide to have a child and you're going to breastfeed that child, the fat that's necessary to feed that baby has to be stored someplace, and every place else is pretty much taken up. So now, we're not taught that. It's just all of a sudden our bodies are morphing and we don't understand why, and there's no appreciation of the sacredness of it. Mm-hmm. There's no celebration. We don't even have, I mean, we have rituals where we chant and we sing songs when for important transitions. Like, you know, we chant this song, "Happy Birthday to You."
Yes.
We all know the chant.
Right.
We light candles. We have rituals because we understand that transitions need to be honored and respected and protected because someone's vulnerable at times of transition. So that's why we have these rituals, but we don't have that.
Yeah.
For girls becoming women. So the first ritual they encounter is dieting. And they grab onto it. Okay, now I'm part of the tribe. Mm. I'm dieting.
Yeah.
And you know the rest of the story.
Oh, indeed.
Mm.
Absolutely. Anita, it has been a sincere pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So much. Now, I want at the very end, we have like 30 seconds left, darn. Okay, I'm going to say what I have to say and then we'll see what we've got left. Be sure to tune in next week where Dr. Deb Burgard is going to be talking to us about health at every size. And let us close with Andrea's opening words where she asks that we search for the lessons. They are the roadmaps for tomorrow. Until next week, remember to savor yourself.
Appreciate you spending this hour with Doris Smeltzer and Savor Yourself. If you would like to learn more about eating disorder prevention, visit our site at andreasvoice.org. That's andreasvoice.org. And be sure to tune in next week for more valuable tips on how to dare to go beyond skin deep and to truly savor yourself. We'll see you next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Health and Wellness Channel.